What happened last night? This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. What is it, 6 a.m.? Oh, it's 9. Good morning. Oh, we have a radio show starting. I guess I should do that now. I was telling Charlie before the show started about my evening, and I'm sleepy. Yesterday was a long day here. It was great. In fact, I'm gonna talk about yesterday some, because it really was the inmates running the asylum. But that was a really long day, and then I got home and just did not treat myself very well. Because you get up really early on a Saturday morning, you get up really early on a Sunday morning, but no one ever wants to go to bed early on Saturday night. Charlie went to go see a concert. I haven't even let him tell me about it yet, because I was just ravaging him with facts of my own evening. We'll talk about that later on. But yesterday was a fun 8-10 day. I was gonna say maybe the most fun 8-10 day. That's not true, because the Saturday after the Chiefs drafted Patrick Mahomes was just a whirlwind. It was a cocaine-fueled fever dream. But yesterday was the most fun long day here that I've had in a long while. Because I don't know if people hear talking about this or if everyone has seen it or not, but Mick Schaefer, who did Sports Sunday here for a while and then did Sports Saturday for a while and is still doing Sports Saturday, I guess. He's becoming Frank Bull. He is transmogrifying into Frank Bull at the end of the month, I think. In fact, Frank Bull's soul is going to leave his body, and then Mick Schaefer's soul is going to inherit it. You're not going to see a difference, but Mick is taking over for Frank Bull. I don't know if it's the exact same job. I have no idea. Okay, Charlie says it's the exact same job. But so Mick is taking over Frank Bull's job at 41, at the end of the month. So Mick is in a transition time, but he's gonna still be doing Sports Saturdays for a while, as much as I understand. But Mick wasn't here yesterday because he was prepping his soul for the body transfer. Also, the one thing about Mick going to 41 and taking Frank Bull's job is one thing I'm nervous actually to ask about, is I don't know how Seren is going to feel whenever Mick tells him that I'm taking Seren's spot on Sunday Sound Off. I don't know if they've talked about it yet. But Mick has told me behind closed doors. He said, "Seren, he's a bum. You're the man for the job. In fact, Sunday Sound Off is just going to be you. You're going to be in all three windows. We're going to record it, and it's going to be a big process, but you're going to be all three soundboards."
You're going to argue with yourself?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I do that here all the time.
It's true.
Man, you give me 3 hours to play around with, and by the end of it, I'm like, you know what? Actually, I would have cut Jeremy Macklin, too.
I walked in this morning, and you were pacing around the room just arguing with yourself.
I was. Well, it's all these damn voices in my head. I've got kind of a Tyler Durden sports take kind of thing going on. I bought a Fight Club for like $350 at Walmart a couple days ago. It was a solid purchase. I felt really good about that purchase. A shocking number of my friends have never seen Fight Club, and I love that movie. Anyway, for anyone who wasn't picking it up, I think Seren's safe on Sunday Sound Off. Sometimes I wonder, like, if someone's listening to this show for the first time, what do they think of me? Actually, I know that people, you know, like, call in and then just yell at Charlie, like, who is this guy? But I wonder if that comes through all the time. I don't know. I'm a naturally sarcastic person. But sometimes I fool people in real life. Like, what, really? No, almost never, really. But Mick is taking over Frank Bolt. So as he's skating around, getting ready for that, I don't know, he could be freaking in Destin, Florida for the 8th time. I have no idea. He wasn't here yesterday. So yesterday, I hosted Sports Saturday. Charlie Carlin, who is here now, ran the board for Sports Saturday. We had a good, fast-paced show. Talked a lot of Royals, NBA Finals, and Jeremy Mack. And we're going to talk about all those things today as well. Or if you're upset by the fact that we've spent zero time talking about any of those things so far, it's the first segment. This is a long show. We'll get to it there. Well, I promise we're going to get there. I don't think we're going to have any guests at all today. We're going to have plenty of time. But so yesterday, Charlie and I are here for Sports Saturday, and then by the power invested in Todd Lebo, I guess, Charlie and I were equipped with the duty of doing Baseball Tonight, pregame and postgame. And man, like, what a strange vote of confidence. Which it wasn't, actually. It was a vote of desperation. Someone's got to do this. Who's in the building already? Oh, Josh and Charlie. They can try it. So Charlie and I put together Baseball Tonight pregame. Do the whole show. Everything works out pretty well. I think it was a good show. And Beard shows up to run the board for that. And then it's like clown car time, because Charlie, Beards, and I all get crammed into the studio. And I say crammed, like, this is a pretty big studio. We all fit just fine. But we, all three of us, end up in the studio, which I don't think has ever happened before, where the three of us, we're like, oh, cool, we can sit in the studio and watch the game. The three of us all cram into the studio here and just watch a 45-hour-long baseball game together. Charlie goes and picks up some Slim Chickens, throw that down our fat faces, and watch the Royals struggle. 12 runs! And then by the time that the game was over, we had like 4 minutes to do a post-game show here on 810. We did a little baby version. Not even a baby version. We did an extra half hour over on 1510-993 ESPN Kansas City. And then I went home. It was a long day, because getting here to run the board for the morning shows, that requires an ungodly alarm clock setting. Like, every Saturday or Sunday night, every Friday or Saturday night, whenever I'm like setting my alarm, I kind of go like, this is worth it, right? Somebody remind me that this is what we need. This is good, right? But yesterday was a long day, but a blast. Today is a much shorter day. But I feel like with all of that Royals yesterday, excuse me, with all that Royals yesterday, I feel like I kind of took my shot on the game already. But I'm assuming that most people listening to this radio station at 9:15 in the morning weren't listening to 1510 or 99.3 FM, ESPN Kansas City, at, 7 o'clock last night. So I know there's a new audience here, but I needed to share a version of my yesterday. And the game yesterday for the Royals was a lot of fun. Like, it was a good... It was a good baseball game to watch. And I think in a large part, I think that's about all you can really be rooting for, right? Like, there are highs and lows here for the Royals. But at the end of the day, they're still half a dozen games back in the division. In fact, they're still 6.5 back, which I'm guessing means... Yeah, Minnesota yesterday beat the Giants, and there was some interdivision stuff. But the Royals still sit at fourth in the AL Central. 6.5 games back of the Twins. Cleveland is 2.5 back of Minnesota. Beards had a good stat yesterday. He found out that Cleveland is the only team in the AL Central with a positive run differential, which is a pretty good sign that you're in a pretty bad division. The real story yesterday, though, obviously, was Lorenzo Cain. He was the highlight of a game full of them yesterday. Full of them in the eighth inning, at least. Cain hits a solo shot and then comes back around later and knocks a grand slam, which is always fun. And the Royals put up a dozen runs. The feeling, I really, this is kind of an odd connection to make, but it's genuine. The Royals winning yesterday and the Cavs winning on Friday gave me kind of similar feelings, if that makes any sense. Like, I was glad, because I would love to see Cavs Warriors go 7. I don't really care who wins. I would rather see Cleveland win. But I'm not super passionate about it. And I obviously want the Royals to win. But both of those games kind of felt like prolonging the inevitable. I mean, it gives you more good games. It gives you a few hours of good entertainment in both of those instances. But I wasn't completely exhilarated by the Cavs' performance in Game 4 because the Warriors are going to win it in Game 5. And if they don't, then they'll win it in 6. And if they don't, they're going to win it in 7. I think they're going to win it in 5. In fact, I think they're going to win it in 5 or 7. If it goes back to Cleveland for Game 6, Cavs probably win. I'm never going to pick against a home team in this series. And the only time I got it wrong because Kyle Korver missed the shot that he was brought to Cleveland to do. So I will not take ownership for my incorrect prediction. I'll blame Kyle Korver. But the Royals win, and the Warriors win, and the Royals win. I'm sorry, the Cavaliers win, and the Royals win. Both kind of gave me similarly like empty joy. Like, all right, I'm glad that happened, but I'm still very aware of the state of the NBA Finals and of the 2017 Royals. If you want to talk about either of those things or eventually Jeremy Maclin, the phone number here is 913-3810-810. What the Royals gave you, though, I do really think is about all you can ask for. Because at this point, I'm pulling the reins back a little bit on the fire sale talk for now. Not because anything has changed, because it hasn't. I mean, that's how you're going to get me to talk about it again. I mean, well, does this mean that they shouldn't be selling? No. I said since before the season, when I had them finishing the season two games over 100 would be an impressively terrible season. I mean, you would have like 18 wins, 17, 18 wins out of 162. Yeah, give me that math, please, Charlie. I had them going, I still got the cough and the cold and the cocaine habit. I had them going a couple games over 500. And I said at the time, that's the worst thing the Royals can be. It's good for the optics. It's good for an enjoyable back and forth Royals win, Royals lose, Royals win, Royals lose kind of season. But if that... And really, I don't even care if it fools fans. If fans are fooled into thinking that they have a contender, that's fine. I would rather talk about the Royals as if they're a contender. I get no joy out of going, the Royals are going to sell everybody and rebuild from the ground up. Whoa. Totally not where I'm coming from. But Dayton Moore can't be fooled into thinking they're a contender. That's where I get a little bit nervous. Because if they were, 500 or a game, just 3 or 4 games out of the division, coming up close to the trade deadline, then I'm getting nervous. Then I'm going, oh no. They can't be fooled by this. Because it's very obvious what's best for the franchise. But again, I'm willing to kind of back off that conversation a little bit. Not because anything's changed, but because it seems pretty obvious to me that's what eventually the Royals are going to do, what they must do. I think we're pretty much beyond. We're going to be beyond. I get nervous saying this because I'm afraid that I'm going to be proven wrong. I think we're pretty close to being moved beyond fooling ourselves into thinking that they're going to end up having a chance to win this division. I'm definitely beyond that. And I think most Royals fans are. I think most of the Royals front office is. But the reason I'm not panicking about that conversation right now is because you still got to wait for other teams to be interested. If you are prepared to sell your big pieces, but the teams you're selling to aren't yet ready to sell some of their minor league building blocks, then you're not going to get anything yet. I'm all for shipping Lorenzo Cain out when his value is the highest, but if you're the Angels looking for a closer and a center fielder, which the Royals have both of on the block, or you're the Nationals looking for both of those guys, man, I would trade Lorenzo Cain today if they said, ooh, grand slam, we'll give you, ooh, look at that, Lorenzo Cain had 2 home runs yesterday, maybe he's Barry Bonds, here's our top 2 prospects. Of course you pull that trigger today, but most of these teams right now aren't in a place where they, A, know if they're going to definitely be a contender, and B, know exactly what they're going to need. If you look at a team like the Rockies, who everyone is confused as to how they've become a contender, so out of nowhere, and maybe people felt this way about the Royals also during the AL championship run. Well, if they say, oh man, well we feel good about our team here, but we're the Rockies. We know we've got a pretty tight window. We needed to bring in starting pitching, like the Royals did with James Shields. Maybe then you have a trade partner for Jason Vargas. But if I'm the Rockies, I'm going to wait. I'm going to stand firm with what I've got, where I'm at now, and wait until much closer to the deadline before I decide, all right, here's who I'm willing to give up on. Here's the building blocks of the future that I'm gonna let go for a chance to win this year. That's a hard decision to make. Both sides of that equation have a lot of self-convincing to do. And I think the Royals are there because their hands are pretty much tied. You can't say, oh, well, we'll just wait and sell in the offseason or next year. All these guys are done after this season, with the exception of Herrera. But his value is extremely high right now because you're giving up a year and a half of control. Makes him all the more valuable. With that in mind, I wonder I keep wanting to say the Chiefs. I think I've got that. My Chiefs itches needed to be scratched, and we'll get to that soon. you know, now I can't help but wonder what the Royals could have gotten in return for all these guys on the trading block last year when the value was even higher. But now it's we're waiting for other teams to say, all right, we'll buy. I think the Royals are ready to sell. But they gave you a good game yesterday. They gave you a fun 6 hours. A game that just like was blazing through for the first half, the first 4 or 5 innings, and then came to a screeching halt as the Royals proceeded to send up 45 batters in the 8th inning. Which again was way more fun than watching the other team do that.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. I remember saying to you at like 5th or 6th inning or something, like, wow, we're going to have a pretty long postgame
show. Yeah, Charlie was getting nervous.
I was just like, well, we're going to take calls for a while. What are we going to talk about with no postgame on it?
God. Man, that's something I wanted to talk about during the postgame show yesterday.
And then it ended up being 5 minutes.
That's something I wanted to talk about during the postgame show yesterday, but I couldn't because the postgame show on this side was 5 minutes long. Is the game yesterday was on FS1, and whenever Charlie realized that we were not going to have any post-game audio coming for the post-game show. And obviously, we don't have anybody out in San Diego. Although, I did volunteer. I said, listen, fly me out to San Diego, and I will go. You can throw me into the clubhouse, and I will get clips. Whenever Charlie realized we weren't going to have any audio for the post-game show, and the game had taken 45 minutes to get through the first 6 innings, Charlie was a mess. He was just like, oh, yeah, God, there's no audio. We're not going to have any Ned. The show's going to, we're going to have like an hour and a half to fill it because we've got, I mean, just us and Charlie, it's going to be okay, baby. Listen, if it all goes to hell, I'll talk about myself for half an hour. That's next.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
I welcome you to think that I'm an idiot. That's great. Often, you'll be correct. Usually, you'll be wrong. But you'll be correct often enough. That's fine. I'm prepared for that. Call in and call me a dope.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I have no memory of saying call in and call me a dope. No memory. I got 3 texts from 3 people that I had no idea were listening this morning during that first segment. Very polarizing. Three interesting texts from three people that I did not know were listening. One said, talk about yourself less. I'm bored. One said, don't talk about Fight Club. Which is funny. Charlie looked confused by that one because of... Have you seen Fight Club, Charlie? Okay, yeah. Sorry, a shocking amount of my friends have not seen Fight Club. And the third text that I received said, hey, good show so far, but please don't call Charlie baby. All of those... Fair text. The only reason, I forget this every time, the only reason Charlie ever plays Sugar Going Down Swinging is so he can interrupt me with the chorus.
It is very entertaining.
I don't know how I'm still not prepared for that. I imagine that this is the worst show for hungover people. Can you just imagine you're just like sitting at home, you've got some sports radio going on, you're just trying to get through the morning, you've got a big gulp cup full of water or something, I don't know, and then all of a sudden, Charlie just turns Fall Out Boy up as loud as the board will allow him. Good morning, everyone. The NBA Finals have been interesting in the most boring kind of way. Watching Game 4, I was left with this sense of of unfulfillment. We got a good game, we got an entertaining game, and somehow by the end of it, I still felt robbed. I feel like I've been robbed of a good series. Because I didn't really want to see Golden State go 16-0 in the playoffs. It would have been cool, but I wasn't dying for that. And I don't really care who wins the finals. But we've all been waiting for Cleveland and Golden State for months. Like it was the expectation before Kevin Durant went to Golden State. Afterwards, it became a virtual lock. And it finally gets here. And they get two good games. Both games in Cleveland were good, fun games. But watching the Cavs try to avoid getting swept, even in historical fashion, with great offense, sort of just left me kind of sighing at my laptop screen and enjoying watching LeBron and Kyrie Irving do incredible things, but only so far as to say, well, I guess we'll wait for the confetti until game five. It seemed like a foregone conclusion since the Cavs let game three slip past them. And it bums me out. Because can you imagine if this game had gone 2-0, 2-2, and these teams were just winning their home games? That's the cliche, right? That a series doesn't start until the home team loses. And that's what I hoped. And I thought Cleveland would head back to Golden State at 2-2. I thought that before the series. I thought that before game three. And Kyle Korver exists in Cleveland simply to make the shots that he didn't make in game three. I'm left wanting more. If the Cavs go win game five in Golden State, then the chatter's gonna start. Because then they're coming back to Cleveland with the series that you would have expected, with a 3-2 hovering over them last year's, blowing a 3-1 lead on everybody's minds. But having to fend off getting swept and then going back to Golden State for game five and knowing you've got to finish out the series there, if you make it back, which would surprise me on its own, I'm left with an overwhelming sense of meh, which really has been, like, that's the NBA this year has been where meh happens. That's what I've been, this entire season. And it sucks because there's been greatness. We've seen great, great performances. LeBron has continued to pad his resume as either the best or second best player of all time. Now, if you get a really hardline stance on one of those two, eventually you're going to get someone screaming in your face from 3 inches away. But LeBron continues to mark himself as the best or second best player in the history of the sport. The Warriors are a historic team with ungodly talent. And I'm still just left wanting something more interesting in the NBA. Yesterday on Sports Saturday, I talked to Evan Riggs, and we were having the discussion of what's next for the NBA. How do you keep this from happening? Where the season is kind of a snoozer. You know, Boston gave everybody some talking points because they ended up with the one seed in the East and the Cavs taking games off. And the Spurs were really good, but then Kawhi Leonard gets hurt. What's the remedy for the NBA? Because even with the salary cap and the luxury tax, even with these collectively bargained agreements where the star can make more money by staying with his original team, the max contract numbers skyrocket if Paul George stays with the Pacers. But you're getting guys who are realizing and who are openly admitting this with their words and their money, that it's more important to win and have fun. Which also, like, makes perfect sense. I think just about everybody gets to a point where say, all right, my salary is either these millions of dollars or like 10% less, but still millions and millions of dollars. And I'm gonna go work with my friends instead of just a bunch of faceless colleagues. And I'm gonna have more fun at my job, and I'm gonna have more success. Like whenever Andrew Wiggins' rookie deal is up with the Timberwolves, do you expect him to stay in Minnesota? They can pay him more. They'll have an opportunity to pay him more than any other team can afford to. But if he decided, this is me being very Kansas-centric. I'm just pulling a name out. But if he decided that he wants to play with Joel Embiid again, I have no idea if they're friends. I don't think I've seen any evidence of that. But they played at KU together, so I'm just putting them together. Don't get too attached to it. But if he decides he wants to play with Joel Embiid, and Joel Embiid is healthy, and he comes back, and he decides that he wants to try to play for a contender that the 76ers are not going to become in this lifetime, why wouldn't Wiggins and Embiid try to start a young version, now, but not as if the Warriors are some grandparents playing basketball? But why wouldn't Wiggins and Embiid try to go play for the Lakers with D'Angelo Russell and Lonzo Ball? And the next steps for the league, I think at this point, are going to be more teams doing this. More guys saying, you know what? I'm willing to make a little bit less money, and instead of playing in Indiana and just playing with the guys I'm here with and perpetually finishing fifth in the conference, sure, I'll take a pay cut. Get that. Charlie right now is just tapping his ring finger, which I think means he wants me to talk about his singleness and that he is available, ladies. Is that what you're doing there?
Yeah, totally. No, I was talking all about the rings. I don't care about the money. Well, they do a little
bit. So you're saying that you're saying that financial situation for you not a big deal. Ladies, I'm telling you, Charlie is
yes.
Really exactly thirsty today.
Yes.
No, but absolutely. You want the achievement, and you want to have fun at work. Anybody who has had a job they just did not enjoy and also had a fun job can understand the difference there. Working with your friends makes it not feel like so much work. And I feel like Kevin Durant's having a way better time and going very basketball centric here. Kevin Durant, the best player on the Warriors. Kevin Durant's probably having a real good time knowing that he's going to get some open looks and he's certainly not going to get all of the attention because he's flanked by some other superstars. Steph Curry is probably, across the country, the second most well-known player in basketball, behind LeBron. He's got a superstar who demands full attention from the defense. He's got Draymond, who demands full attention from everybody on the court. Otherwise, they might get punched in the face. And then all of a sudden, you've devoted your entire defense to covering Durant, Curry, Draymond, and then you've left Klay Thompson open. So then you're just going in this infinite loop. And then eventually Durant's open, and then Curry's open. That seems like a more fun way to go about your life as a basketball player. So why wouldn't more teams do this? I think it would be better for the league at this point to just admit that you have four contenders. If you could get four teams, ideally more, but I think it's going to be hard to convince anyone that you have more than four real contenders. If Boston has, we talked about this yesterday, Boston has the assets to bring in all of the pieces that are on the trading block. Maybe they make a run at Jimmy Butler, and Gordon Hayward, I think, was the other name that came up. You start piecing these teams together. Give yourself four contenders, and even then, you're just waiting until the conference finals. Like, that kind of sucks. But the NBA is past parity. The NBA is a post-parity league at this point, because guys have decided they'd rather play with their friends, have fun, rather than tack on those extra few millions. Phone number here is 913-3810-810. I'll take your thoughts on whatever it is we're talking about at any given time. JT is called in. JT, we've talked 2 days in a row now. How are you doing today?
Yeah, this goes to show how the lack of production in my life.
Right.
I heard what you're saying, and if you're looking at it from a city that has no basketball team and is not a small market, and not from the perspective of an owner, what you said makes perfect sense. But if you're one of the other 26 cities that's not, or 28, how many teams are in the NBA
now? They're 30, yeah.
Yeah, 26 cities. So if you're one of them, then you are looking at this and going, this sucks.
Oh,
why should I go to games? And as soon as fans start to say, this sucks and why should I go to games, owners start to say, we have to change this in the labor negotiation. So at a minimum, you've painted the picture for labor unrest in the NBA if this continues to happen.
No, you're absolutely right. And this is just a sad fact. Like, I'm a Suns fan. I have nothing to live for in basketball. And I totally understand that. I don't have any interest in watching Suns Mavs. At the same time, I completely agree that eventually owners are going to say, well, yeah, this is garbage. We can't build a contender as long as this sort of self-governance is happening among the players. But
let me tell you, I don't think owners will say that as fast as fans will. Okay, owners will say, "Am I making money?"
Mm-hmm.
As long as the fans are duped into continuing to go to games, and the owners make money, they don't care. So they'll perpetuate a horrible product for as long as they possibly can, as long as the dollar figures are there. But the fans, I believe that the fans are more informed and aware of what's happening in the world today. And I think that you'll see fan revolts that will cause the owners to take action on this long before you'll see the owners do it on their own.
Well, and I think if there is a league that's going to do that, it seems like NBA fans might be the most sort of educated fan base as far as knowing how your league is working, and having it, because you're putting five guys on the floor at a time. It's easy to play an NBA GM, much easier than it is to fill out a 53-man NFL roster or a baseball farm system. And I don't know how to build a hockey roster, but that's because I don't care about hockey particularly. But the thing that I think was interesting there, JT, because I think you're right on that point, and maybe fans will keep going to games if you've got 20 of those teams in the middle tier, where you've got 10 teams in either conference that are contending for those 3 through 8 seeds, and you can say, well, listen, we're playing in the playoffs. You get a few good games in a row, and maybe you knock off the super team Cavs. It's never gonna happen because the NBA has the most predictable league on the planet as far as the teams at the top. But maybe owners can sell that.
It might happen to one of the four, but it's certainly not happening to four of them.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, and so I think you got a good point in terms of fans will kind of buy that mediocre product as long as they see the playoffs as something meaningful, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the more that the press starts to center all of its attention around the three or four teams that have the collection of superstars, then the more the fans check out and the less that they buy tickets. I think that will drive it pretty quickly to the point that the owners will go, wow, if this continues to happen and the superstars are not spread out amongst the league, then we are, you know, if I'm not one of those three or four teams, I'm screwed.
I think you're right, JT. I think that the evolution of the NBA is going to be fascinating. Always good to talk to you. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
The one thing where I get hung up on with the argument of trying to revive the parity that I've genuinely thought about, and I know that owners are thinking about, and columnists are thinking about, and I'm sure players are thinking about, is how do you fix it? How do you tell a guy you're not allowed to take less money to go play with your friends? The actual step-by-step process of making that happen seems extremely difficult, because eventually you're saying, no. You have to take the highest monetary offer. And then all of a sudden you've sent LeBron to Sacramento. Like, wait, what? How did that happen? No. We won't pull that. Bring that back. I don't want to see that happen to anyone. No one should have to go to Sacramento.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. I'm Joshua Briscoe. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe and tell me how much you love the show or hate me. There's probably other options, but there's definitely not an inverse of that. There's definitely not like a, hey man, love you, your show's bleep. No one's saying that. I've only gotten that tweet from one person, and I didn't even know that my mom had a Twitter, so that was a very strange... That was a strange tweet to see in my timeline. Charlie's informed me that we have a very, very short segment here. So I think we have to just like solve, I think we have to solve the NBA problem in like 45 seconds. Whatever we come up with in the next minute, it becomes law. I got nothing. That's a problem. Oh, darn. I might need, Charlie, we're going to go long. I need at least 90 seconds to figure out exactly how to make this happen. I just find it interesting. Is that so bad? Because if anybody had the answer to this, like with like resting players, they would have shared it so far. You only have a certain realm of things that you're allowed to tell a franchise, a coach, and a player to do. If you say, hey, you can't rest stars during nationally televised games, how are you going to get in everybody's sore knee at 7:30 to decide if they're allowed to sit or not? Are you going to tell Paul George he can't take less money to play on a more fun? No, we're out of time. Dang, I had the answer. We'll do it next.